Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ.
This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Bienvenidos. Welcome to the weekend, the Memorial Day weekend. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee, and this is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. We're broadcasting from our flagship studios, AM 620 KPOJ in the Rose City, Portland, Oregon. Streaming online at 620kpoj.com and blogging at radicalrust.net. And if you want to get in on the fun, give me a call at 1-866-5577-377. And it's once again been a busy week in the world of news, politics, and culture, and we wrap it up every weekend here on the Russ Belville Show with our
Week in a Minute.
Democrats cave on the Iraq funding bill, withdrawing any sort of accountability or timetables for ending the occupation of Iraq.
There has never been a chance of a snowball in Haiti that Congress would cut off funding for troops in the field.
George W. Bush tells us once again why three American soldiers need to die every day in Iraq.
9/11 taught us that to protect the American people, we must fight the terrorists where they live so that we don't have to fight them where we live.
We have a new Monica scandal, Monica Goodling's testimony about her role in the firing of nine U.S. attorneys for political reasons.
I do acknowledge that I may have gone too far in asking political questions of applicants for career positions.
As Memorial Day weekend heralds the beginning of summer driving season, gas prices are skyrocketing.
Gasoline prices would be in inflation-adjusted terms at the highest level since the 1920s.
And in completely unimportant news, Blake Lewis, the beatboxer from Seattle, lucks out by not winning American Idol. Oh, yeah. I tell you, I can't get enough of that beatboxing stuff. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just because I'm a child of the 80s or something. Every time I hear that stuff, it makes me think of the Fat Boys. Yeah, I'm kind of dating myself with that reference, I'm sure. But anyway, we're not going to be talking about American Idol for the whole show. That's definitely, like I said, the unimportant news of the day. But it is the Memorial Day weekend, and I figure, you know, we don't have to be all doom and gloom. However, we do have to start things off with the news from Iraq. And, this funding bill that just went through, $100 billion funding bill. And of course, you know how this started. The Democrats came out and they said, there's a new sheriff in town. We're not going to give the president a blank check in Iraq. We're going to have timetables. We're going to have these rules for withdrawing the troops. We've got to get the troops out of Iraq. And so they voted, you know, and they sent the bill to the president with the timetables in it. That was a couple weeks ago. And the president vetoed it like he said he would. And most of us down here in the left progressive sphere, if you want to call it that, we're saying, well, just keep sending it back. Keep forcing the president to say no to our troops. But, you know, that's not how it worked out, unfortunately. So we got this latest bill. We got this $100 billion funding bill with no timetables in it. And, I'm not too happy about that.
Everyone considered him.
You know, they always say that Democrats are spineless.
Never stood one single time to prove the county wrong.
I wonder where they get that notion. That's kind of...
Mama called him Tommy, but folks just call him yellow.
You know, maybe if we stood up for what we
something
stood up for, then people would believe us when we say that we are against the war. But, you know, the Democrats, they caved. They caved on this bill, and it's just... It's just sad. It's just despicable that all this political calculus is going on here, and our soldiers are dying. You know, if this were any other issue, you know, I wouldn't be so upset about the whole political wrangling, and I could understand that, you know, like they say, politics is the art of the possible, and
Well, yeah, it is when you're talking about a highway bill, or if you're talking about some sort of unimportant issue. But we're talking about our soldiers dying, and this is the quote here that I got. I was just checking out the news, and here was their excuse. It said they did not, Democrats here, did not relish the prospect of leaving Washington for a Memorial Day break vulnerable to White House attacks. Okay? They felt vulnerable to White House attacks. Oh, no. The Republicans might say that we're against the troops. And that criticism seemed more politically threatening to them than the anger that the Democrats knew that they would draw from the left from bowing to Mr. Bush. And, so you're more afraid of spin than you are of the anger from your own constituency that elected you to get us out of Iraq. That was the whole point of the 2006 elections. And Democrats, you got to know something about those elections. You didn't win those elections. Republicans lost them from keeping us in Iraq. And we elected you to get us out of Iraq. And as far, to cave like this is just, well, there's a word for it. I'm not exactly sure what that word is. I can't remember it off the top of my head. But there's a particular word that we won't use on the radio that has something to do with, what I think is going on here. How does that work anyway? How does that political calculus work? Let's see. GOP anti-troop spin squared minus anti-war anger from the left over the weekend. Carry the 2, subtract the 5, and divide by pi, and then that's less than or equal to our troops dying in the field. Is that how that works? Man, and I know you're upset about this too. I'm going to go to the phones here. We've already got a call. We've got Dennis from Mansion State Park is on the line. And Dennis, are you as upset about this bill as I am here?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, tell me all about it, Dennis.
Well, here's a couple of interesting quotes. And take a guess who said them.
Okay.
This desert is not worth one more drop of British blood being shed in it.
One more drop of British blood. Now, you caught me on that one. Go, give me the answer.
Winston Churchill,
yes.
Early 1900s, his adventure in Mesopotamia.
Yes, yes.
How about this one? This atrocity will be a bend. We will not cut and run. Yeah. 6 weeks later, removed all of the Marines from Lebanon. That would be Ronald Reagan.
That was Ronald Reagan. Yeah, that was. Thank you. I appreciate that one, Dennis. Yeah, the cut and run.
That's right. He's the first one of these guys to realize that adventures in the Middle East is pretty bloody stupid.
Well, Lawrence of Arabia couldn't put together the Middle East. What makes George W. Bush out of Midland, Texas, think he's going to solve the millennia-old conflict between Sunnis and Shias? It's crazy.
Yep. Now, here's my credentials to criticize this man. I retired from the United States Army 20 years. My son is an MP stationed in Seoul, South Korea, soon to be going to Iraq. My son is willing to risk his life for this country, his life, limb, and mind. These bloody, cowardly Democrats aren't willing to risk their cushy black tie jobs to say, no mas. We're not playing this anymore, George. And if it loses me an election, so be it.
Dennis, you win the Nail on the Head Award from the Radical Russ Show here. Yeah, absolutely. That is the nail on the head. They're more worried about their cushy jobs. They're more worried about winning a re-election. And here's the thing that kills me about this. And Dennis, I got to get you off the line. Thank you for your call. I really appreciate that. When they said that they're feeling more threatened by the, we don't support the troops spin than they felt threatened by the anger Democrats knew they would draw from the left. Well, who is this left that you're talking about in America? Who is this left? There's a new New York Times CBS poll that just came out, and it says 63% of the American people want a timetable for withdrawal. 63%. Now, if that's the left, two-thirds of America is the left, okay? Two-thirds of America is saying we want a timetable for withdrawal. Also, 63% of Americans say or disapprove of President Bush, and that's one of the highest disapproval ratings we've ever seen for a president. So these Democrats, they're still playing as if it's September 12th, 2001, as if this president has a 90-whatever percent approval rating. The people are behind you, Democrats. There's no need for you guys to be a bunch of, scared cowards on this. Oh, man. How does this political calculus thing work? I just don't understand it. We're going to keep talking about this because we're gonna hash this out here on the Russ Belville Show. Your calls are already coming in. I see the lines just lighting up. Give us a call if you want to get in on this with your opinion about this Iraq funding bill. The number here is 866-5577-377. Right after the break, we'll come back. Ed in Portland's holding on. Right after we get a couple commercials out, we'll go to you. It's 16 after the hour.
To the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. I'm Radical Russ, and we're talking about the Iraq supplemental bill.
We removed the arbitrary timetables for withdrawal and the restrictions on our military commanders that some in Congress had supported.
Well, I'll tell you, President Bush is pretty happy about this bill because, of course, he got everything he wanted. He held his breath. I'm going to hold my breath until I turn blue unless you give me everything I want. And the Democrats caved in on it.
Everyone considered him a coward of the county.
And there's just no excuse for it. I mean, 6 out of 10 Americans say that the U.S. never should have gone to war in Iraq now. 6 out of 10. 3 out of 4 Americans say that the war is going badly. Almost half of the American people say the war is going very badly. And meanwhile, the Democrats that we elected, that we sent to the congressional majority to get us out of Iraq, just talk about how there's just the political calculus. We just don't want to have this attack of being soft on the troops. They're more worried about the next election than they're worried about our troops who are out there dying.
The American people are demanding it. 70% at least of the American people say we have to have accountability. So instead of putting accountability into the bill, we make a gesture at it.
Yeah, that's the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, talking about making a gesture at accountability. I'll tell you what the gesture was. The gesture was a big middle finger to all of us that went and voted for Democrats in 2006 to get us out of Iraq. And I know this is making you up as upset as I am. If you'd like to talk about it, we're at 866-5577-377. I've got Ed in Portland, Oregon, holding on the line, wants to talk about this. Ed, are you upset about this bill as I am, or am I just crazy here? Ed, you still on the line? I think we've lost Ed in Portland.
Nope.
Well, we'll Ed, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, go ahead, Ed. Tell me your opinion here on this whole this thing. Do you think they just caved in, or was this the right thing for them to do?
Well, I know, I think there are gradations in the middle. I mean,
go ahead.
Good morning.
Go ahead.
This is Craig in Portland.
Yes, Craig, go ahead.
I am so incensed at the failure the Democrats to support, what they said they were going in to do. As a 53-year-old man, I've lived through a lot of changes through our government, but I got to say I'm dumbfounded at the level of incompetence of the politicians that we've sent into Washington at this point. How many times do we have to repeat this, action of failure or failed behavior before we finally figure out, as citizens, I suppose, as voters, that once the politicians get into Washington and they realize that their whole world is about power and money and control, they completely forget about the responsibilities that they were sent there to complete.
I agree with you. They've become insulated. They're in a bubble, and this bubble is being defined by Karl Rove and those spinmeisters on the right that they have them cowering. They have them thinking that if they don't support if they don't give this funding bill, that somehow they're not supporting the troops. This meme has been drawn up that has this idea that if we don't pass this bill, suddenly it's like they're going to run out of ammo. It's like they're not going to have any food or Humvees or anything. That's not the way it works. There's already money in the pipeline to take care of the troops all the way through July, even up until August. And then what would happen is I think the American people would be pretty would clearly see that if Bush kept vetoing the same bill, that it's Bush who's not supporting the troops rather than the Democrats. Do you agree with me on that, Craig? Oh, okay. I think Craig's already gone. Well, all right. That's fine. Again, give us a call if you want to get in on the fun here at 866-55-77-377. You know, this is the thing about this, is that while we're sitting around here, while the Democrats are sitting around here worrying about the political calculus, and they're afraid that they're going to be called in, there's going to be some attack ad that says, you know, Representative so-and-so didn't vote for the troops. And I just don't think that's going to fly anymore. I think everybody here, you know, everybody already understands what's going on here in Iraq. Here's what's happening. Three soldiers die every day. Every day that we keep debating and we keep talking about whether we should get them out or whether we should pass a bill, all these debates, while this is happening, three soldiers die every day. Every 8 hours, one of our soldiers dies. Now, since the election in 2006, since we elected the Democratic majority, and we elected him, we can unelect him. Since the election in the past 6 months, the monthly death tolls have been 115, 86, 84, 82, 117, and this month, 98 soldiers dead. So no less than 82 soldiers every month for the past 6 months have died. That's 582 soldiers in the past 6 months. That works out to about 3.3 deaths per day, and we're trending toward this being the second deadliest month of the war. This is the deadliest six-month period of the occupation, and it's starting to show in the polls. The polls are showing that the people understand this war is lost. It was lost when George Bush went in there. It was lost when they disbanded the Ba'ath Party. It was lost when they let the looting take place. It was lost when they didn't secure all of the munitions, the 400 tons of munitions that were lost. This war is a fiasco, and it's time to get out. How do you ask a soldier to be the last one to die for George W. Bush's mistake? And here's part of the problem. Here, I'll just lay it out for you. We can't blame this entirely on the Democratic Party. I know you don't. You think maybe we could, but no, this is not entirely the Democrats' fault. This is partially our fault. This is a representative democracy, and all of you out there listening to me, if you haven't called your representative, if you haven't called your senator in the past week to implore them to vote against this bill, then you're part of the problem. If you're not part of the solution, you are part of the problem. So if you're sitting there by your radio, grab a pen. I've got a number for you. I want you to take this number down. If you do only one thing this Memorial Day weekend, this is what you should do. I want you to call 202-225-3121. That's the congressional hotline at 202-225-3121. You just tell them your zip code. They'll hook you up with your senator's number and your representative's number. You only need to make three phone calls, one to your representative and one to each of your senators. That's three phone calls over the Memorial Day weekend to let them know enough is enough. It's time to get our soldiers out of Iraq. We don't care about any political calculus. We don't care about the elections coming up. There is one issue on the table. Get our soldiers home. That number, 202-225-3121. If you're not calling them, then they can live in that bubble. If we're not letting them know how we feel, they're going to continue to be insulated. They're not going to realize the power that we have. I'm Russ Belville. This is the Russ Belville Show, and we'll be right back after the bottom of the hour. We're going to turn to some news, so stay tuned to your radio dial. We got more stuff coming up. This is the Russ Belville Show, the home for truly radical progressives. And happy Memorial Day weekend to everyone out there listening on the radio airwaves, as well as streaming online at 620kpoj.com. Hey, if you don't get the chance to call in at 866-5577-377, don't forget that you can also email me, radicalruss@gmail.com, and maybe your thoughts will make it to the air through the emails here. We're talking about this Iraq supplemental bill for $100 billion that has absolutely no timetables, no restrictions on the president, no accountability whatsoever. Well, that's not true. The bill actually has benchmarks. It has benchmarks for the Iraqi government the benchmarks are defined by the president, so he gets to decide what the benchmarks are. And then if they don't make those benchmarks, well, he can just waive them. So yeah, we're holding the president accountable by asking him to promise to be accountable, and that should work out just fine. Boy, this bill, I know, three soldiers. I just keep coming back to that, three soldiers every day. While we sit here, while the Democrats are over there hemming and hawing over worrying about whether or not they're going to get reelected and what are the big bad Republican spinmeisters going to say in some attack ad. And meanwhile, three soldiers die every day. I mean, think about that. When you get up in the morning after a long, your 8 hours rest, you get up in the morning to go to work, a soldier just died. When you go to work and then you finish your 8-hour workday, another soldier just died. And then at night when you lay down to go to bed, another soldier just died. And so all these soldiers are dying, and meanwhile our leadership is just talking about this being the beginning.
This is not the end of the debate. We have to be here to bring this bill to the floor so we can go forward. But this debate will go on.
Yes, but Speaker Pelosi, how much longer can the debate go on? How many more soldiers have to die while we're debating this? How hard is it to just stand up to the president? A president with a 28% approval rating. I just don't understand. Somebody has to explain this to me. I mean, I'm pretty new to this whole political arena. I've been following politics all my life, but, just really getting into the nitty-gritty of this. Someone explain to me what this meaning is. When I was watching some of the news shows, I saw the Democrats talking, some of the Democratic leadership were talking about this, and they were saying, well, we just don't have the votes to override the president's veto, and we don't have enough votes in the Senate to be able to get the same funding bill through, and all these excuses. I just keep hearing excuses while our soldiers are dying. That's what it really comes down to. And so we get the House and the Senate voting on this bill. The Senate passed this bill yesterday, 80-14. 80 United States senators decided, 4 out of 5 United States senators decided to give the president a blank check to continue his foray into Iraq. 80 senators. That's the thing, is they could not pass this without the support of some Democrats. There were not enough Republicans to support this. So that meant Democrats turned their back on the American soldiers, turned their back on the people that elected them, turned their back on 2/3 of the American people who say this war is a mistake and that we need to have timetables and we need to get out, turned their back on us. Now, I do want to congratulate the senators who made the right decision. A lot of these senators did vote against this supplemental bill. Now, of course, you've heard about the presidential contenders who voted against it. Hillary Clinton voted against it. Chris Dodd of Connecticut voted against it. Barack Obama of Illinois voted against it. But here's the catch. Clinton and Obama didn't vote against it until enough votes were in to show that it would already pass. Right. So it's not like they went out on a limb, when it was still up in the air, when there was still some question as to what was going to happen. They kind of dipped their toe in the water and made sure, OK, well, my vote is safe now. I can go ahead and vote no now that it's already decided. That's the kind of leadership we're seeing from the Democrats. It's like they're saying that keeping their jobs, keeping being a senator and keeping, keeping their elected position is more important than your son or daughter in the military. That's more important to them. Their political future is just more important than taking care of our soldiers. And this is offensive. This is offensive that they think of our soldiers as political pawns, that they think of the military as just, some tool that's out there that, we can ignore what's happening out there on the ground while our soldiers are dying, and we can sit here and keep having these debates over whether or not we're going to get out. And speaking of some of this debate, here's where it starts to get a little silly. They're trying to now spin this, of course. The Democrats are trying to spin this to say, well, this is just a baby step. This is just the first step. And at least we got something in front of the president that has the word benchmark in it. Now, even if the benchmarks won't be met, even if he's not required to meet the benchmarks, at least we made an incremental step and got the word benchmark in there. Oh, and we raised the minimum wage. That's the other thing they're going to push. It's like, well, we raised the minimum wage. Well, yeah, that's nice. Thank you. That's been long overdue. But still, our soldiers are dying. And here's Representative Obie. I got this quote here. This is the one that just tops it for me. Representative Obie from Wisconsin talking about how, well, we tried, you know, we're trying to get these things passed and we're trying to get our soldiers home, but we can't always be successful.
This proposition falls far short of containing everything that it should on both the Iraqi war and on our own domestic needs, but I take some comfort in the knowledge that even Babe Ruth struck out more than 1,300 times.
Yeah, but see, every time Babe Ruth struck out, a soldier didn't die. Man, I am sick and tired of these sports analogies being used on the floor of the Senate and the House with regards to the Iraq war. Look, war is not a sport, okay? Now, I know the Republicans think it is. I mean, that's their big sport. They love war. They're all about war. But war is not a sport. Real people are dying out there. I mean, this is just the latest in these silly sports analogies. Dick Lugar from Indiana, Republican from Indiana, talked about, you know, the surge being not a Hail Mary pass, but it's a draw play on third down. And John Shimkus, this is a couple weeks ago. You probably heard this one where John Shimkus from Illinois, Republican from Illinois, had that whole talk about the Cardinals playing against the Cubbies and the Cubbies score more runs. Hey, come on. Let's get some serious talk down here. Why are we pulling all these sports analogies? This is the way they think. This is the way these politicians are just ignoring the will of the people and continuing this Iraq war. And this is just a huge, huge mistake.
This is a step backward, and we need to get back on track to end this war because the American people want that, and it's the best thing for our national security.
Now, that's a true American patriot. That's Senator Russ Feingold, and I love the man, not just because he's named Russ, but also because he's a true American patriot. He voted against the war. He was the only senator who voted against the USA Patriot Act. So he's got some credibility with me, and he's absolutely right. This is a step backward. Now, in addition to Clinton and Dodd and Obama being some of the senators that voted against this supplemental funding bill, we also have from Oregon, Oregon's Democratic Senator Ron Wyden was one of the 14 who voted against this Iraq supplemental. So that's great. We're really glad for that. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Senator Wyden. We really appreciate that. We also had... in the House passed at 280 to 142. And I'm proud to say that all of the four Democrats from Oregon, DeFazio, Wu, Blumenauer, and Hooley, they all voted against this supplemental. So, yes, thank you. Thank you for doing that and standing up for the American people. I'm glad somebody's going to. You can't blame us here in Oregon, at least us Democrats here in Oregon. We're all behind ending this war. So, yeah, three soldiers a day. Every 8 hours, we're losing a soldier, and meanwhile, we're giving the president a blank check to continue his war in Iraq. And I want to know what you think about this. Have the Democrats finally caved? Have they proved enough that they're the spineless people that all people always say they are? You know, that's the other harm here in this whole Iraq spending bill and caving in on it is, you know, they always, one of the things that independent people, and coming from Idaho, I always learned this from the people out there, more rural people, is they say, well, Democrats are always against things, but they never tell us what they're for. They never stand for something. Well, Democrats, you blew it this time. You had something you could have stood for, and you blew it, worried about your own political calculus, worried about your own job, while three soldiers a day die. This is despicable. We're not going to stand for it anymore. We elected you. We can unelect you. I'm Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show, 42 after the hour. Welcome back. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee, broadcasting from Little Beirut out here on the left coast. And we're talking about how the Democrats have caved in. That's right. They've caved in on that Iraq spending bill, giving the president the blank check he wants. Peg from North Plains North Plains, Oregon is hanging out on the line here at 866-55-77-377. Peg, what can we citizens do to get our boys back from Iraq? Hello, Peg, you're on the air. Peg? Well, I think we've lost Peg. Oh, Peg, are you there?
Oh, hi. Is this Russ?
Russ? Yeah, I can hear you now. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. I called that number that you gave. I wanted to get Nancy Pelosi's office, and I got it, and it was they said they were closed and that their mailbox was stuffed and they couldn't take a message or anything. And I'm telling you, I am a senior citizen, and I've got all my marbles, thank goodness, and I am so angry at them. I swear they've lost their backbone, the Democrats.
Yeah.
They just lost their backbone, and I am so angry with this, that they didn't stick to their guns when they said they were going to ask for timelines and dates. And it's like they backed off like they're scared rabbits or something.
I know. It's crazy, Peg. I mean, I haven't been around as long as you have. I've, you know, the first president I can really remember, you know, really deeply is Jimmy Carter. So that's about as far back as my, you know,
yeah,
my personal
I go much, much farther than that.
So can you tell me, did the Democrats, I mean, did they ever have a spine? Was there a spine there to lose?
Well, occasionally I saw flickers of encouragement and everything, but not at this point. I mean, I am really, you know, I didn't realize they were so weak-kneed and so, oh.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much for your call,
yeah,
Peg. I appreciate it.
Let me get that number
out to everyone else, too. That number is 202-225-3121. Let's fill up their mailboxes. Oh, thank you very much. Daniel in Portland, you're on the air. Daniel, go ahead. We've got about a minute. Hello, Daniel? Daniel in Portland, go ahead.
Hello. I was calling to agree with you. The Democrats have turned out to be spineless, but I'll disagree with you on us only losing three people a day. We have to look at the future of what's going to happen. My late husband was a disabled veteran, and he died in 2000 because of things that happened to him in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
How many of our men are not going to be able to make the proper decisions in the future because of PTSD, which will lead directly to their death? For example, my late husband was having nightmares from Vietnam to the point he literally didn't have enough sense left to come in out of the rain and ended up dying of pneumonia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's the untold story about this. And thank you for your call. I appreciate that.
Oh,
the untold story here is about all of our soldiers who are suffering such traumatic injuries that in the past would have killed them. We have a much higher survival rate now, thanks to our wonderful, incredible medical technology out there. But, of course, that means we're going to have more soldiers coming back with these problems, with these traumatic brain injuries, with this post-traumatic stress disorder. I say, you know, we're creating the next generation of homeless people, and it's going to be huge. We don't do mental health here in America, and we certainly don't take care of our veterans the way that we should. And this is going to have long-lasting consequences for most likely the rest of my life and probably the rest of many of your lives. And to see the Democrats cave in on this when it's so important, when there's so much on the line here, it's just very sad. I want to defend Democrats, but boy, I don't know how I'm going to do it with this. I'm Radical Russ. We got another segment coming up real quick here. Just a couple more commercials. We'll be right back. It's 50 after the hour.
Belleville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
This is the Russ Belleville Show. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee, blogging at RadicalRuss.net. Stop on in. We're having a poll on the presidential candidates. You can make your voice heard at RadicalRuss.net. It's 54 after the hour. We're talking about the Dems caving in on this whole Iraq funding bill. And James in Portland, Oregon is on the line talking about, James, what do you think is going to happen as far as the Democratic Party here with them caving in on this bill? Hello, James. James, you're on the air. Hello, James.
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, James.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I love your show, too.
Oh, thank you.
I will take your opinion off air, but I want to get your opinion on what you think this spineless act of the Democrats, what rhetoric it will give the Republican presidential hopefuls to just, you know, fight back at the Democrats for being flip-floppy or just what is your opinion on it?
Okay, well, that's a really good question. I think it's more harmful for them to not stand up for what they believe in, because then we open ourselves up, the Democrats open themselves up to the attack of, you know, again, being spineless on not standing up for what they believe in. You know, the Republicans never did ever run away from their base. You know, when you got to remember, going all the way back to the 70s here, we had years and years and years of the Congress being run by the Democratic Party, and the Republicans were on the outs, and it was after Nixon, and everybody believed that Republicans were corrupt and bad and all this thing. And so what did they do? Did they start, you know, shifting for the polls? Did they start, you know, trying to, you know, talk out of both sides of their mouth? No, they went back to basics. They went back to their base. They went back to the evangelicals. They went back to the fiscal conservatives and started talking about what they believed in and what they stood for. And it took them a while. They didn't have immediate success with this. This all through the late 60s and the 70s, they were getting their butts handed to them on a platter in election after election. But slowly but surely, the people who believed in what they were saying started to attach themselves to the Republican Party. They started to believe that the Republicans stood for something, that they actually had issues that they believed in. Now, of course, I'm diametrically opposed to most of what they believed in, but at least they stood for something. And this is the terrible thing they've done, is they've opened themselves up for being flip-floppers and for being people that are seen as spineless and weak. I think that's far worse than what they would have had to face if they'd have tried that spin on, you know, not supporting the troops. Now, Rodney is back online. Rodney in Portland on the Dems. Rodney, we got about a minute or so before the hard break. So, Rodney, give it to us quick. What do you got to say about this whole Democratic capitulation?
Well, personally, I think all they're doing is pushing, as you said, pushing their base away and energizing the Republican base at the same time. It's a 2-for-1 win for the Republicans. And for myself, I'm going to the Democratic headquarters down, I think it's just on the east side of the river, 923 northeast 9th, I think. I can't remember.
Yeah, now, here in Portland, but, yeah.
Yeah, here in Portland, and I'm going to chalk the sidewalk since that's legal here. Going to have
excellent.
A little chalk party, and everyone's invited.
All right, excellent. So down at the Democratic headquarters, thanks for your call. Rodney has hit the nail on the head as far as this goes with the Democrats. They need to hear from us. They need to realize they cannot run away from the base. You know, this is something they do with gay folks. You know, I cover a lot of gay issues on a blog that I write for, and they do this with the gay folks. They'll come out to the gays, and they say, we need your money. We need to fight against the Republicans. The Republicans will do all these terrible things to the gay community. And then once they get the money and they get elected, they ignore the gay community because they figure, well, what are they going to do? Vote for Republicans? They got to vote for us. They're not going to vote for Republicans. That's what the Democrats are doing right now. They're saying this was Harry Reid when he said, we fear the reprisal, you know, the Republican attack ad more than we fear the reprisals from the left, even though the left now, so to speak, is 2/3 of the country. Well, it's time for that 2/3 of the country to call 202-225-3121. That's the line to get a hold of Congress. I want you to fill up their mailboxes. They need to come back from this break over Memorial Day and realize they made a huge mistake, that the American people aren't going to stand for this anymore. It's time to get our soldiers out of Iraq. 3 soldiers every day are dying out there. It's not time to be spineless. It's time to stand up for what you believe in. And I believe it's time to get the troops home, and the Democrats made a huge mistake. I'm Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show. We're going to turn to news. We'll be right back.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now the Russ Belville Show. Streaming at 620kpoj.com and on the air at AM 620 KPOJ. This is the Russ Belville Show, the winner of America's search for the next great progressive talk radio star. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Well, that's right, 6 after the hour, I am Radical Russ, your red state refugee, and this is the Russ Belville Show, the home of truly radical progressives. We're broadcasting from our flagship studio, AM 620 KPOJ in Stumptown, Rip City, Portland, Oregon. Streaming online at 620kpoj.com and blogging at radicalrust.net. You can give me a call at 866 866- 55-77-377. And we're talking about the bill.
Everyone considered him the coward of the county.
Bring him on.
Never stood one single time to prove the county wrong.
But I'm the decider.
His mama called him Tommy, but folks just called him Yellow.
Do I hear the voices?
Something always told me they were reading Tommy wrong.
I'm a commander guy.
Yeah, see, the cowards of the county, the cowards of D.C., the Democratic Party who caved in on this $100 billion supplemental bill that has absolutely no timetables for withdrawal, no timetables, nothing meaningful to get our troops out while three troops die every day. You know, growing up in Idaho, I got to do a lot of hunting. Well, not a lot of hunting, but a lot of my family is hunters. And so we were always raised around guns. And one of the things that my grandfather and some of my uncles taught me when it came to guns is that you always consider a gun loaded and you never raise a gun unless you're willing to use it. And I'm going to apply that metaphor to the Democratic Party right now. They went and pulled the gun. They pulled the gun that said, we're going to put these timetables in front of Bush, even if he vetoes them. And so they did. They put that bill forward, and of course, Bush vetoed it. So you don't pull that gun unless you're willing to use it. Keep using it. You know, the people are behind you, Democrats. 63% of the people say that they want timetables to get our troops out of Iraq. And here you are capitulating to the worst president ever, a president with a 28% approval rating. Now, I've got Christine in Portland, Oregon, who's been hanging on the line with me here, very patiently waiting through the break. So I appreciate that, Christine. What do you have to say about this whole Democratic capitulation here? Christine?
I'm with you all the way on this. I want our fellow Democrats, our fellow progressives to understand something very important here. Now, I'm from a long line of veterans in every generation, and I have a grandson going for his third tour in Iraq coming up.
He's okay.
I've done my homework for 5 years. I do hours every day of study on all the back issues of everything I can get my hands on. It's what I'm paying in depression for the guys out there on the line, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some kind of sacrifice, that's for sure.
It is a sacrifice. And I'm asking people and all the Democrats, the supporters, to understand that the war in politics is every bit as serious as the war on the ground. We do pay in blood. We have to remember that we must pay in blood for a democracy every now and again. Now, obviously, our boys and girls over there are not dying for democracy.
Yeah, that's for sure.
We know what they're dying for, and they know what they're dying for. But they signed an oath, and they're living up to their oath, and that is their duty for themselves and their own souls. And you're right about all the injuries, everything coming back. It's far worse than most even progressives understand.
Yeah, and it's nothing against the troops either, because, you know,
exactly.
We believe in the troops. That's the thing about the progressives. You know, so many of the Democrats are afraid here that the blowback is going to be, oh, you left the troops without any money. You
right.
didn't support the troops. Well, nobody supports the troops more than Democrats and progressives.
Exactly.
We're the ones who are actually in this war. We're the ones in the House and the Senate who have actually had military experience.
Right. Now what we need to do is understand that the politics in office now, the Democrats in office now, are also fighting a war, and their war is a war of numbers. We've got to stop gut-punching them. We've got to start supporting them and understanding that their battle is a battle of numbers. Lieberman has threatened to turn Republican, which would take the Senate back, which we would lose all our investigations.
Yeah, so we're
and
all
the investigations are very important in
I
this
understand
war.
That too. So now we're all being held hostage by Joe Lieberman. That's
well, right.
Sad
well, now here we need some memes. Tom Hartman calls them memes. We need some smart-ass remarks to get back in the meme business here. And right now we're gut punching our own Democrats, saying they're spineless. Well, who's been saying that? Republicans have been saying they want, you know, we want stem cell research to grow a spine. Well, let me tell you something. Even stem cell research will not grow a Republican a conscience. Our war is with the Republicans. We've got to keep on that focus. But, you know, these guys, you got to understand what they're saying. The newspaper headlines are not supporting our troops at all. They're calling, well, Bush calls, for instance, outposts. A lot of our boys and girls are getting killed in outposts.
Yeah, yeah, right.
That's two Humvees with a concertina wire around it.
Exactly.
You know, we got to understand what we're dealing with here. Republicans have no conscience.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your call. I appreciate that. I've got some other calls on the line that I've got to get to, but thank you. And let me riff on that point just a little bit, because I've heard that too, is people saying, well, you know, don't come out and be saying that they're cowards, Russ. Don't come out and say that they're spineless, because now you're just playing into their hands. No, I'm not. The Democrats are playing into that. I'm just reporting what I see. I just call it like I see it. And, you know, even a stopped clock is right twice a day. You know, if the Republicans are saying we're spineless and then we go out and do something that's spineless, well, then what are we supposed to say to that? Ah, got Mike in Vancouver, Washington's got an opinion on this, too. Mike, can you hear me out there?
Yeah, I hear you great now, Russ. Thank you.
Go right ahead, Mike.
Hey, love your show. Congratulations on the gig. It's good to listen to you.
Thank you.
I have to agree with a lot of, well, at least what I could hear the previous caller. I do think that's true of a lot of the Dems that voted with the Republicans on this thing and basically decided all of a sudden the timeline doesn't matter. But I don't think it's fair to use the broad brush and say, well, they all just gave up their spine. My own congressman, he did vote for it. You know, Brian Baird, he's a Democrat. Both of my senators voted for it. It really stung. It was really hard to watch him do that. But Brian Baird made his feelings very clear through all of this. You know, last summer, he wouldn't even talk about withdrawal. Now, when this came up this year, he voted very clearly for withdrawal. He voted for the timeline. Now, when the timeline came out, unfortunately, he did still vote for it, but he made it clear before the fact that he was not willing to allow the funding to just run out on the troops while they're still in the field.
And that's the thing that just drives me nuts, is that's playing right into the Republican hands, where they keep saying, well, if you don't vote for us, all of a sudden the troops will be out there and all the money will run out and they'll have no guns, they'll have no armor, they'll have no nothing. Well, less than they already have, since the Republicans didn't give them the armor they needed. But that's just such a lie. That's just not the way it works in this funding battle. There'd be plenty of time. What would happen is if the Democrats didn't send this bill forward, then the president would be forced to make a tough decision to actually bring the troops home, or else he gets caught. He gets the one pegged as the one who's letting the troops suffer out there. You know, thank you for your call. I appreciate that, Mike. You know, yeah, there's a lot of this whole political battle, and I've heard the whole story about, well, you know, Lieberman says he's going to switch and caucus with the Republicans, we'll lose our majority, and there's a political fight, and politics is the art of the possible, and well, can it just be possible to bring our troops home? I mean, how many troops have to die while we're going through all these political shenanigans, all of this debate, and just bring the troops home? I've got Angie in Portland, Oregon. Angie in Portland, Oregon, hanging on the line here about the Democratic vote. Angie, let us know what you think about this. Did they make the right decision politically?
Well, I think it's a little more complicated than you're presenting it.
Okay.
There's one thing that I truly, truly agree with Mirtha on, and that is the troops. And Mirtha got on yesterday and said we did absolutely the best we could. The boats were not there. And I just trust him completely. Not as far as other things are concerned. I think he's a little too far to the right of what I feel. But as far as the troops is concerned, he has been the standard bearer, and I trust him on that.
Okay, thank you, Angie. Thank you. Appreciate your call there. Jack Mirtha voted for the bill, and there's people saying, well, we just didn't have the numbers. We couldn't get a timetable bill past the president. Well, so keep sending the same timetable bill. Make him keep having to veto the troops. That veto is a powerful word. People are going to hear veto this bill, veto this bill. And if the president came out and kept saying, well, they kept sending me timetables, and so they're hamstringing our commanders out in the field, and they're trying to micromanage the war. He can try all that he wants. Two-thirds of the people want the troops out. They would have supported this. If you weren't intending to hold strict to timetables, don't bring it up in the first place. It just feeds into that meme of us being spineless. That's what I'm so concerned about. If the whole idea was that we weren't going to do timetables until the next bill, until we get to the next fiscal year, then that's when it should have been brought out. Not now, when you put it forward and get our hopes up and then take it back because, oh, we don't have the votes. I'm not putting up with that. It's 16 after the hour. I'm Radical Russ. I'll be right back right after the break.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Hey, I'm Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show. It's 21 after, and, you know, I've got to move on from the subject here. We've been talking about the Democrats caving in on this funding bill, but, you know, I got to move on because my blood pressure's getting a little too high, and, you know, my doctor said to watch out for that. But, you know, just want to end on this note here. The Senate voted for this this funding bill, this toothless funding bill that gives the president the blank check in Iraq. And, you know, it was 80 to 14 vote. We had 80 senators voting for it and 14 voting against it. And here's an idea, you know, just if you're wondering if some of these senators actually understand the electoral calculus that's going on, three of the senators that voted against the bill were Republicans. Yeah, that's right. Senator Burr from North Carolina, Senator Coburn of all people from Oklahoma, and Senator Enzi from Washington are the three Republicans that voted against this bill that has no timetables in it. And maybe it's because they realize their folks back home, you know, just like I was saying earlier, two-thirds of the American people think that we need to have a bill that has timetables, that we need to start doing something serious about getting out of Iraq. Now, just to go back to what we're fighting for, you know, we talk about, you know, what we're fighting for there in Iraq. And one of my callers had mentioned that a little bit earlier. We all know what we're fighting for. And, you know, it has something to do with what we're dealing with here in this this holiday weekend here. Yeah, it's the Memorial Day weekend, and of course, this is the beginning of the summer driving season, so everybody is noticing and feeling that pain at the pump, you know, with the gas prices, how they've been rising lately. And here's just some stats for you, some numbers on this whole gas price issue. Since December of 2006, the national average for a price of a gallon of regular gas rose by 74 cents. That's in 2006 dollars. That's a 32% rise in inflation-adjusted terms from 2006 to the middle of May. And what that works out for the average family, is that means that your cost for gasoline has gone up by $1,000 a year in the past 5 years. Now, wonderful listeners out there, raise your hand if you've gotten a $1,000 raise in the past 5 years. Yeah, that's what I thought. Not a whole lot of us have gotten a $1,000 raise, and yet the gas prices keep going up and up and up. Now, the Center for American Progress, this is the liberal think tank, and just, you know, fair disclosure here is that that's who sponsored the contest that got me into the seat that I'm in now. The folks at the Center for American Progress have done a study on this, and check out this statistic.
Low-income families in the bottom 20% of the income distribution paid 2005, the last year for which we have data, 9% of their total income on gasoline.
9%. 9% of their total income. Now, we're talking about the people who are in the 20%, the 20th percentile, the lowest percentile, you know, the poorest families, the people who are going to be hit the hardest, 9% of their income every year goes toward gasoline. That's just, you know, and this is the hard choices Americans have to make, is deciding, should I spend money on gas to get to work, or should I spend money on a doctor's appointment for my kid? Should I spend money on gas to get to work, or should I spend money on food? You know, this is where it's coming down to. And so we elected this, well, we didn't elect him, we elected Al Gore, but we've got this oil man in the White House for the past 6 years, and yet the gas prices just keep going up and up and up. Now, here's some of the other stats. Here's some amazing things. American drivers, in the past 26 years, they measure how many miles the American people drive, you know, total, just total road miles. And every year, this number goes up. Now, partially that's because there's more people as, you know, time goes on, the population grows. But despite, you know, whenever we have an oil crisis or the price goes up or something like Katrina hits and we have a disruption in the refinery system or whatever, despite all of that, over the past 26 years, the number of miles people drive has gone up every year, despite all these things. So that shows you right there that, you know, gas is kind of an inelastic demand here. It's something that people just can't decide not to have. Well, this year, this is the first year so far that American drivers have driven less miles. For the first time in 26 years, less miles, because they're feeling the pinch. They're feeling the pinch here. Now, a lot of the people that will look at this issue will say, well, maybe this is good. Maybe this is a good thing because we'll encourage conservation and more people will ride bicycles or take mass transit or they'll buy more fuel-efficient cars. And yes, that's true. That's true to an extent. But the problem is that the average American, especially the average working-class poor American, can't just up and buy a different car. They can't just up and, you know, change their entire lifestyle. According to the Census Bureau, 79.3% of workers, almost 4 out of 5 workers, drive themselves to work. And they've got no choice. They have to. They have to drive themselves to work. Now, the average mile per gallon in a car is about 30 miles a gallon, or 23 miles a gallon. The average commute's about 11 miles. And this works out to the typical worker having to drive about 484 miles per month. And that ends up costing about $48.83 per month back in December. Back in December, it cost you about 50 bucks a month to afford to drive to work. So people make their budget out for that 50 bucks a month. Well, now, with the prices here in the Portland area reaching like 3.25 or so, that's going to put you to driving, you know, somewhere around 330 miles compared to your original 484. What are you supposed to do? Just not go to work the rest of those days? Now, here in Portland, we're kind of lucky that we have a really good transportation system. The MAX and the TriMet systems with the buses are really great. But not everybody has that choice. I know back in my original home, Boise, Idaho, Boise-Nampa area, they don't have a very good transit system. So these people are forced to commute, and these prices keep going up. And so... these gas prices keep going up. All our boys are in Iraq, and so there's got to be something done about this. And yet, who could do something about this other than the oil companies?
Just in 2005, 2006, and the first quarter of 2007, the big five oil companies have had combined profits of $250 billion, $250 billion for the big five oil companies in the last 2 years.
$250 billion that they've made. And yet, we can't get a break on the gas prices. And they've got plenty of excuses. They're going to say there's not enough refinery capacity. And they're going to say that there's all these disruptions in the market. And it's supply and demand. And gee, there's just nothing we can do about it. And yet, they're raking in $250 billion in profits. ExxonMobil made $39.5 billion in profits in 2006. ConocoPhillips made $15.6 billion in profits. You don't think some of those profits could go back toward maybe making some more refineries so we can have some cheaper gas? We got to do something about it. We'll keep talking about it right after the break. I'm Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show, and it's 28 after the hour. After the hour, I'm Radical Russ. This is the Russ Belville Show, and welcome to Memorial Day weekend. I hope you're having a good weekend this weekend, getting out to do some camping or do some traveling, visit your family, visit your friends. But you know, it's tougher and tougher these days with the gas prices, the way they keep going up and up and up. Now, you know, it happens every Memorial Day. You know, this isn't the first time that we've seen this happen. Every Memorial Day, it seems, every time, you know, we're just getting ready to go out and drive, the gas prices go up, and of course, the oil companies then rake in these record profits. And what are we going to do about it? Just what are we going to do? I mean, I see these kooky ideas that float through the internet from time to time. You've probably seen this one, the spam that comes through and says, we're going to have Don't Buy Gas Day. We'll pick a day, and you know, who knows, maybe it's Wednesday or whatever. We'll pick a day, and if everybody in the country just didn't buy gas on that day, that would send a message to the companies. Yeah, right. Of course, you're going to buy gas the day before so that you can be ready for the day without gas, right? And so that'll also send a message to them. That'll send a message that everybody's still buying gas. Oh, these silly internet things. You can't believe everything you read on the internet. I don't know if you knew that. But also, what's the other one I hear? The other one is don't buy gas from the biggest company. Don't buy it from ExxonMobil. right? Just buy it from the other gas companies, and that'll force the big gas company to drop their price, and then the market will correct, and then all the gas. Well, that's not going to work either, folks. These are just silly things. These things cannot be addressed without the government. This is one of these problems that is big enough. It's going to require the government to get involved. Now, this affects us all in different ways. Now, personally, let me give you my personal effect from these whole gas prices. Okay, first of all, I gotta let you know that I drive a Jeep. It's kind of required here in Portland. It's like when you move here, they issue you one. So I drive this Jeep, and I've heard it from the folks on the left. I've heard it from the environmentalists. You know, you shouldn't drive the big gas guzzler. I know. I should get a hybrid SUV or something like that. But, you know, we don't all have the funds to be able to do those kind of things. I don't know if you knew this, but talk radio isn't exactly the biggest paying job in the world. So we don't all have the funds to get a new vehicle, and a lot of us have to have these big vehicles for, you know, the jobs that we do. I do a lot of work where I haul PA gear and speakers from place to place, so I needed a vehicle big enough to haul that stuff. And I do a lot of outdoors stuff, so I need something that's four-wheel drive. So, you know, we don't all have the luxury of being able to pick the smallest, most fuel-efficient car. So my family, as many of our listeners know, I live back in Nampa, Idaho, the conservative county back in Idaho. And so for me to drive to visit my parents, if I just wanted to go on Memorial Day weekend and drive to visit my parents, from Beaverton to Nampa, I live in Beaverton, and from Beaverton to Nampa is a 420-mile trip. Yes, it really is, 420. I didn't pick just 420 for the joke. I Google it. It's 420 miles. So my Jeep gets about 15 miles a gallon on the freeway. So back in December, when the price of gas was back then in December, it would have cost me about $130 to make the round trip to go visit my parents. Now, when it's at about, well, a couple weeks ago when it was at $3.10, it would have cost me $175 to get back, from $130 to $175 to make the round trip. When gas hits $350, my round trip's going to be almost $200, $196 just to visit my parents. And when it hits $4, and believe me, dear listener, it's going to hit $4 by the end of this year. Just trust me on that one. It's going to hit $4. By that time, it's $225 for me to get back and forth to Nampa to visit my parents. And this is affecting people. Now, I know that's just a vacation, and, you know, I can do without a vacation, but still, we're talking about people being able to drive to work, being able to get their kids to school and such, and having to choose between gasoline and food, or gasoline and rent, or gasoline and health care. And this is just sick. Now, the oil companies, meanwhile, continue to rake in these huge profits, but the Congress has called them in and said, well, we need to do something about these gas problems. And last year, when there was congressional hearings on this, the oil execs said that the problem was the refineries. See, it's not that there's not enough oil. It's just that the oil needs to be turned into gasoline, and gasoline, you know, the oil is turned to gasoline at these refineries. And I don't know if you know this, but we haven't had a new refinery built in the United States since 1976. So we're still operating on virtually the same capacity for refining. And of course, as demand has gone up with the same supply, well, of course the price is going to go up. So the oil executives are in front of Congress, and they promised that they would that their goal was to increase our refining capacity to increase it by 1.6 million to 1.8 million barrels a day. That's how we would address the shortfall in oil, is by increasing our refinery capacity. Okay, so that makes sense, and that's something that we definitely should be doing. But then I'm reading the New York Times on, I think it was Wednesday or Thursday, and there was this article in the New York Times explaining why the oil companies are backing away from their pledge to increase oil refining capacity by 1.6 to 1.8 million barrels. They're backing away from it, and they've decided now they only want to increase by 1 million barrels. And why is that? Because of ethanol. That's right, because of ethanol. Because we are trying to have biofuels, we're trying to get away from our addiction to foreign oil. They're saying that, well, if there's all this investment in ethanol, then that won't be profitable for us to build these new refineries. So because you American people are trying to get us away from foreign oil, we can't make as much money, so we're going to have to cut back on the refineries so we can continue to make our profits. That's exactly right, because, you know, $39.5 billion in 2006 wasn't enough for ExxonMobil. They need more profits. Now, the other part that's a problem here is all the mergers in the oil companies. Now, you've noticed how we don't have a whole bunch of oil companies anymore. There are five major oil companies, and we used to have Exxon, and we used to have Mobil, and now it's ExxonMobil. It's all one company. So when these companies merge, they can start to get rid of their unprofitable refineries. So it's the mergers and all of this consolidation in the oil industry that has caused the gas prices to go up so much. So just like we broke up the AT&T and we broke up the telecommunications industries back in the day, it's time to break up the oil companies. This is where Congress can step in and break up the oil companies. They've become too big. They've become too consolidated. And that's what's causing the chokehold on the gas supply that's causing all of our prices to rise. The refineries in America are making a profit of $1 per gallon of gasoline. $1 profit out of a $3 gallon of gas, folks. That's what's happening here. And it's time for Congress to step in. Now, of course, Congress isn't going to step in. They know what, they know where their bread is buttered. They know where they're getting their campaign contributions. So it's up to us. It's up to us to put pressure on the Congress to do something meaningful about the gas prices here in America and to do something meaningful about ethanol and biofuels. You know, they're going to try to increase the ethanol from 6 billion gallons of corn ethanol up to 15 billion gallons by 2012. That's, of course, because we got the farm industries and the corn growers that want to have that. The other problem, though, is that they want to switch to this switchgrass and all these cellulose ethanol types of products. And, of course, they're ignoring the potential of hemp because, you know, we can't turn to hemp because, you know, kids might get high. So, you know, we got to have our high gas prices. It's a big, huge mess. I've got the phone lines open at 866-557-377. If you've got some ideas on how to solve the gas crisis or just to, you know, commiserate on the misery here of the high gas prices here on this Memorial Day weekend. We're going to take a short break. Be right back. We got John and Jen who are both holding on the line right after the break here. It's 42 after on the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Welcome back. It's 45 after the hour. I'm Radical Russ Belville, assuring you that I'm far less high than Rush Limbaugh. And we're talking about the gas prices here. We've got a couple of callers holding on the line. Jen in Portland, Oregon. Are you a Jeep driver, Jen? Is that what you're calling?
No, I'm absolutely not a Jeep driver. And I'm calling because I wanted to challenge what you said about how it's kind of necessary to drive a Jeep in Portland. And, you know, I understand that there are times when you need a car. But in a city like Portland where you have such great public transportation, and, you know, you can rent a car, you've got a fabulous flex car program. I really feel like that's, you know, it's always a choice.
Well, that's true, Jen. And I got to be honest, you know, I do use the MAX and the bus system a whole lot in this town. And,
uh-huh.
You know, coming from Boise, that's just like a luxury to me to have a bus that comes every 15 minutes. That's just amazing to me. So, yeah I am totally taking advantage of that and the flex cars and so on. But, you know, there are times when you got to haul some gear from one place to the other and it just won't do on a bus. So. But thanks for your call, Jen. I really appreciate that. And we got another caller hanging on the line here. The caller who calls in from time to time, my father, the Rockin' Johnny B, is on the line. Dad, you there?
Yep, I'm here.
So he said, Dad, I'm sorry I couldn't visit you for Memorial Day, but, you know, I had to pay rent.
I hear you have no money.
I have no money. I'm a poor man.
I understand. I'm over here in Nampa, and I'm starving to death.
Starving.
I had to fill my car up, and it was like $70.
Yeah. See, now,
but I have an answer.
What's your answer, Dad?
My answer is, I'll put this in your pundit pipe and smoke it.
I'll put something in my pipe and smoke it.
All right. Gas stamps.
Gas stamps. Okay, yeah. How does that work?
Okay, that works like in 1942, we had a gas crisis because we had a World War II going on. See, so what we did was we had stamps to buy gas, to buy fuel. Okay?
Okay.
And it was partially funded by the federal government. My thing is, if you're under a certain income bracket, then what you do is you get gas stamps.
But kind of like food stamps then.
Yeah, only okay. This time the federal government, by law, takes the money that you get for your gas from the large oil companies.
Mm.
So they pay for the gas, the extra gas, or the gas that you have to buy because you're poor.
So we just dip right into the oil company profits in order to support the gas stamp program.
Ain't it wonderful?
Well, I always like that. I think that's quite a progressive thing to take money from the rich and give it to the poor. I think that'll work.
It's called my trickle-up theory.
Trickle-up theory.
Yes. Give the money to the poor. They will spend it. The rich will get it eventually anyway.
That's right.
So give the money to the poor.
Yeah, you give money to rich people and they just invest it.
They save it, they invest it, they put it overseas, they put it in South America and any place else they can think of except the U.S.
That's right. Let's keep our money here. Give it to the poor.
Yes. Well, we can't move. We spend it.
That's right. Well, thanks, Dad. I appreciate the call. That's the Rockin' Johnny B on the line. And those of you who are fans of the Russ Belville Show, you're going to hear from him probably from week to week because, you know, I couldn't be where I am today without the influence of my dad, a very, very wise man who's seen and heard many, many a thing. So, all right. Yeah, that's the gas crisis here in America. And you know, maybe that stamp idea is not a bad idea. You know, let's help the poor out so that they can still get to work and get their kids to school and so on. Maybe that's a plan. Maybe tax credits of some sort, you know, a tax credit for buying, instead of getting our tax credits for buying SUVs like we get now, maybe bigger tax credits for hybrids. Or, hey, here's an idea. How about raising CAFE standards? You know, that's the fuel efficiency standards that haven't been raised in years and years. Or if they have, they've just been raised in small, small increments. You know, a lot of the candidates out there, presidential candidates, are calling for raises up to, you know, 35, 40 miles per gallon. And, you know, it's way past time to do that. We've got the technological know-how to be able to make more fuel-efficient cars, and you know it's just time to do that. You know, I rail against those oil companies a little bit, and let me throw them just a little bit of a bone here. You know, it's kind of sad. You know, when we're talking about corporations and corporate profits, and it seems so unfair, but realistically, you can't fault a corporation for going out and making a profit. I mean, that's like faulting a snake for biting you. I mean, you knew it was a snake when you picked it up, and the thing about corporations is they're by law required to make a profit. They, no other consideration, doesn't matter how poor you are or what's, you know, how that's going to hurt America, that's not their interest. They're by law, they must make a profit for their shareholders. And that's why only the government can get involved to solve this problem, because they're the ones who make the laws that control the corporations. That's what we need to do to get some relief for our gas prices here in America, because this affects everybody. This is going to affect our food prices. This is going to affect all the prices in America, thanks to the high fuel prices. So time to do something about it. Maybe gas stamps are the right idea. I'm open to all ideas here at 866-5577-377. And if you don't get a chance to call, you can always email me at radicalruss@gmail.com. It's 50 after the hour. We'll be right back after the break.
You're tuned to the Russ Belville Show. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
The hour. This is the Russ Belville Show. I'm Radical Russ, your Red State refugee, and hey, I'm going to try something new here for this last segment of the show. We just got a few minutes here to wrap up the show, and you know, sometimes we lefties get accused of being all angry and being all, you know, just so concerned and consternated about all the issues of the day. So I want to take this time here for the last segment. I'm going to make this a weekly thing here. For our last segment, to do something just fun, just something light and easy and funny and pop culture-y so that we don't end our show on just being angry. And, you know, there's so much to be angry about, but still, we got to take a look at the lighter side. So this time, I'm going to take a look at this lighter side.
After a world record vote of 74 million.
That's right, American Idol.
Of American Idol 2007 is...
Drum roll, please.
Jordan Sparks!
Yeah, that's right. Jordan Sparks, the 17-year-old girl there on American Idol, won the show. Now, I'm a big fan of American Idol, and a lot of times I listen to talk radio and I hear people poo-pooing American Idol, like, you know, how can you watch that fluff, these lousy reality shows, and aren't there more important things to focus on? And, well, yeah, there are, but, you know, you can't just be 100% focused on just all these terrible bad news stories, you know. It's going to drive your blood pressure through the roof. So, you know, I take a break every Tuesday and watch that American Idol. I'm a musician, so, you know, it's kind of interesting to me to see these kids singing and have this talent show. I find it very fun. But I just want to cure one of the myths here, right? Because here's one of the things that I hear people say. They say, more people vote for American Idol than vote for the President of the United States. Well, no, that's not the way it works, folks. Yes, there were 74 million votes for American Idol, and there were only, like, you know, 100 million votes for the presidency. If you count all the votes for American Idol over the season, it's like 600 or 700 million. So people get confused because they think, well, that's, you know, all these people care, more people care about American Idol than the president. No, they don't. When you vote for American Idol, you can vote multiple times. You can call on the phone and you can text message. Now, look, if we could have sent text messages for Al Gore back in 2000, he'd be president by now, right? You know, if that's the way we were doing elections, then you know, we'd all these troubles we're having now with Iraq and global warming, maybe we'd be on our way to solving them. But this is the winner here. This is Jordan Sparks. Here's her song.
This
she wanted.
Is mine now.
And it was so sweet because she's kind of crying here at the end, you know. But what a lousy song. You know, if that's what winning is, having to sing this song, This Is My Now, that was my then, This Is My Now. That's the worst song lyric since Paul McCartney wrote In This Ever-Changing World In Which We Live In. It's just a terrible song. For my money is on the kid that got in second place, that Blake Lewis kid. Oh, yeah. Kick it, boy. Word. Yeah, boy. I love this stuff. I'm a big fan of the whole beatboxing thing. You know, people make fun of that, like it's just spitting into a microphone or something. But let me tell you, that's hard. That's very, very talent. That's a huge talent. That's very, very hard to do. And so it's like when people make fun of yodeling. They think yodeling is slink. Try yodeling. You ever yodeled? It's very, very hard. And that's an incredible talent. And it just warmed my heart because it took me back to the day, you know, back to the mid-80s when I was just getting out of high school back in Nampa, Idaho. And the last place in the world you're going to hear hip-hop on a radio station is Nampa, Idaho, right? So it's all country, and there was a classic rock station and stuff. And I remember it was the Nampa Centennial. This is the 100-year anniversary of Nampa, Idaho back in 86. And this kid turned me on to that song, that Dougie Fresh, the beatbox song about the show. And so that just really warmed my heart to hear that. So that's our good news there for the day, a little bit on American Idol. I'm Radical Russ, and this is the Russ Belville Show. We're going to be back every week at this time, so you can check in next week. We got plenty to talk about. We'll be taking your calls next week about all sorts of topics. And if you didn't get a chance to call in, email me at radicalruss@gmail.com and take our presidential American Idol poll at radicalruss.net. Take it easy, everyone. Happy Memorial Day, and call your Congress.